From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last night, Penn State's Board of Trustees sacked legendary football coach Joe Paterno and university president Graham Spanier. Students rioted in the streets. This shakeup comes in the midst of a huge and troubling scandal that has engulfed the campus and shocked the nation. It was sparked by allegations that a Penn State assistant football coach was a serial pedophile and that university officials failed to stop him and were slow to report him. What does this say about the culture of big-time college sports programs? This hour on Point, big questions about Penn State. You can join the conversation. Did the trustees do the right thing in firing Joe Paterno and Graham Spanier? How are you making sense? Can you make sense of what happened at Penn State? And joining me now from State College, Pennsylvania, is Amy Warden, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's been on the Penn State campus covering the story through the riots, the tear gas. And Amy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you.
Well, give us just a very quick sense of the scene there and what the mood is like.
The mood, I would call somber today. It's cloudy here in State College, and that I think would be an apt way of describing people's emotions the day after the loss of their beloved football coach.
Now, Paterno said he was going to resign at the end of the season. Let's listen to a statement from one of the Board of Trustees. Last night in a press conference, which was held on campus, Vice President of the Penn State Board, John Surma, told reporters that in light of all of the alleged sex abuse and failure to take action, they would be making some big changes to the university.
The Penn State Board of Trustees tonight decided that it is in the best interests of the university to have a change in leadership to deal with the difficult issues that we are facing. The Board of Trustees and Graham Spanier have decided that effective immediately, Dr. Spanier is no longer president of the university. In addition, Joe Paterno is no longer the head football coach, effective immediately.
So, Amy Warden, what's been the reaction to the firing from the students, for example?
Yeah, well, actually, you could hear a bit of the reaction right there in your clip, Anthony. That was from a room full of mostly news reporters. So a number of students were there as well, but you could hear the audible gasp when the vice chair of the Board of Trustees announced that they were in essence firing Paterno. Then after that, I mean, immediately after the news conference, thousands of students began to stream into downtown State College and sort of surged through the streets in kind of a cat and mouse game with troopers and local police all night long, who ended up having to use tear gas to disperse the crowd as they, you know, began to topple vehicles and pull light poles down.
So expressing obviously a lot of anger and displeasure over the firings, particularly for Joe Paterno. Remind people or enlighten folks across the country who might not be completely aware of what Joe Paterno stands for at Penn State.
Yeah. Well, I first of all, I don't think any other institution in this country can be so associated with one individual as Penn State is with Joe Paterno. He has been on campus for 60 years, 46 of those as head coach. It's an extraordinary career he's had as the winningest coach in NCAA history. Beyond that, he has done enormous things for the university. He's very well paid, but he's given back in spades. He's donated millions to the university, set up a Department of Classics here. He's a Brown University alum with a deep love of the classics. And academics has always been very important to him. He has a very solid record in encouraging his players to succeed in the classroom as well as the athletic field.
And the former president, Graham Spanier, president since 1995. Give us a sense of how he was viewed on campus and what kind of reaction there is to his firing.
Yeah, well, very different reaction. Despite the fact that Spanier has done a great job in fundraising for this university, and he fought hard to keep money in the budget just this year for the university, there's been enormous development here, and investment in all kinds of research for this very large university. But last night you could tell that he was definitely not the focus, and it seemed really, some people really just didn't care. In fact, they thought maybe it was time for Spanier to go. Maybe he was just focusing too much on research and not basic education, they thought. He was not a beloved figure among students I talked to last night.
Hmm. Now, clearly, in firing Spanier and Paterno, the university is trying to halt the damage that this scandal has done. And let's keep in mind, we're talking about shocking allegations here of child abuse. So what's your view about whether this scandal changes or reforms Penn State in any way? You know, what do you see in the near future here?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. As the trustees made their hasty decision after an emergency meeting last night, it was on the heels of word that there was going to be a federal investigation by the U.S. Department of Education into whether the school violated federal law in terms of that mandates reporting of incidents of crimes like this to the federal government. So they did so under enormous pressure. They also have said that they will launch their own internal investigation to see how, you know, whether procedures are in place and they weren't followed, or whether new policies need to be put in place to ensure such a horrible thing as is alleged to have occurred will, you know, won't happen again.
Well, Amy Warden, thanks so much for bringing us up to date. And these are a lot of the issues that you put on the table we're going to be discussing for the rest of the hour. Thanks for joining us today. We're very grateful.
Great. Thank you, Anthony.
That's Amy Warden, a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She joined us from State College, Pennsylvania. And joining me now from Port Washington, New York, is George Vesey. He's a sports columnist for the New York Times. His column in this week's sports pages was titled "The Dangerous Cocoon of King Football." And George Vesey, welcome back to the show. Great to have you.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So Penn State obviously needs to put this right, halt the damage that this scandal has done to the university, not to mention to try to prevent this kind of this alleged abuse that occurred. Do you see the firing of Joe Paterno and President Spanier as a necessary first step?
I certainly did by yesterday. Now, Monday morning, when I came out of my marathon madness and began to confront this, my sense was that Paterno could probably get through the end of the season. They could pat him on the back, and then somebody wrote me an email saying, well, what about the dinners and banquets and honors? And I said, you know, probably none of that, just polite, thank you, goodbye, here's the door. But it didn't last that long. The more that we knew hour by hour, and that's the danger of making judgments, and for all of us being in the loop 24 hours a day, you learn things hour by hour. It looks worse. It looked worse Tuesday and then Wednesday. I would say by yesterday he absolutely had to go. And so did Spanier for that reason. My only question about the young scholars who tossed cans last night and tipped things over was, now I suppose there's a form of logic that could say if they were demonstrating in favor of Joe Paterno, were they also demonstrating the child abuse isn't so bad, or that nothing really happened, or had they been watching too much Fox and were, you know, into the victims of the media kind of stuff? I mean, who knows what was on? Or it was a nice night and they felt like throwing cans outside. I really don't know about that end of it, but he had to go.
And George Vesey, you make the point that, of course, this is a case about allegations of horrible allegations of child sex abuse. And I want to play a clip of tape. This is from Pennsylvania State Police Commissioner Frank Noonan speaking on Monday about these allegations. And let's just listen to what he had to say.
This is not a case about football. It's not a case about universities. It's a case about children who have had their innocence stolen from them and a culture that did nothing to stop it or prevent it from happening to others.
So that's Pennsylvania State Police Commissioner Frank Noonan. And George Vesey, you wrote this column, "The Dangerous Cocoon of King Football," mm-hmm. which you said aided and abetted this scandal. And how so? What does this scandal say to you about the way big-time, big-privileged college sports programs aid and abet this sort of thing?
Well, I'm around it a lot, and I'm not a big fan of big-time sports at all. I personally think that football, Division I-style football, should be cut adrift from colleges. Donna Shalala, Joe Paterno, nobody's ever persuaded me, Gordon Gee, nobody's ever persuaded me what football and big-time sports have to do with education, with learning. To me, it's just getting people on campus, making people around the state happy. They give money, they go parties, they travel with the team. If that's education, I'm missing the point. But I was trying to draw the line from this horrible scandal that everybody had a game the following Saturday, including this great man that we have all, including myself, admired. And now I have to ask myself, did we admire the image that was set? And, you know, that we said, that I helped set 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But nevertheless, as we have this icon, you know, this Thanksgiving Day balloon of Joe Paterno up above our heads somewhere, did everybody need, I don't need a game on Saturday. I don't care what Penn State does. But did people in that state need a football game? Did Joe Paterno need a football game? So everything got pushed upwards and down, probably ending up in the president's office. And as we understand, it just got diminished as it got moved uphill.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook.
We are Penn State!
We are Penn State!
We are
Penn State!
And we'll all
Penn State!
And we'll
you welcome
Penn State!
We are Penn State, and we always will be. That's Penn State's longtime football coach, Joe Paterno, leading supporters Tuesday in a Penn State chant. Coach Paterno and University President Graham Spanier were fired last night by the Penn State Board of Trustees in the wake of a child sex abuse scandal that was hushed. George Vesey of the New York Times is with us. He's a sports columnist for the Times. And George Vesey, I just want to read one brief paragraph from actually your colleague, Maureen Dowd, who wrote a column about this in the Times this week. She writes, like the Roman Catholic Church, Penn State is an arrogant institution hiding behind its mystique. And sports, as my former fellow sports columnist at the Washington Star, David Israel, says, is an insular world that protects its own and operates outside of societal norms as long as victories and cash continue to flow bountifully. Your reaction to that, because it seems related to what you wrote and what you've been saying.
Well, exactly. I mean, we're all talking around, David, whom I know, and Maureen, whom I admire greatly. As far as being outside societal norms, well, I don't know about that, because it seems to me that Maureen's been very good in writing about the scandal in the Catholic Church, as well an op-ed columnist can do and ought to do. But how different is the football thing from the Catholic scandal or from stuff that we have seen in government? Joe Paterno used to like to prod President Nixon for trying to predict who was going to be the national champion one year, and it seems to me that Nixon had a little problem of knowing where his boundaries were, too. So I'm not so sure that football is any different. As Pogo used to say, we have seen the enemy and they are us. I think that football... But the problem is that football gives us the crapola of being character building, and they get this smarmy tone. All these coaches talk down to the public and the press about, you know, we know best. We're raising these young fellers as great citizens. And the reality is it's really a pretty dirty business where people learn right away that there's a price on their heads for illegal money and scholarships and jobs and all of that stuff. It's a dirty business, and it's right in the middle of college. And any college president who says he or she doesn't know about it is just absolutely lying.
Mm. I wanted to ask you a little bit about what you thought about the response to so many of those college students on campus who were clearly outraged at the firing of Joe Paterno. And let me just read you something that we got from a listener just a few hours ago,
right.
Winston Smith. Those who required a pound of flesh from Coach Paterno must now be happy now that they have successfully carried out their high-tech lynching. Here's a guy who ran a squeaky clean program with a high graduation rate as any football program in the country. He was a positive influence on and on. You get the sense. And then also, let's make clear, Paterno has not been charged with anything, but he had an opportunity to do more to stop this alleged abuse, correct?
Well, first of all, isn't Winston Smith a name out of 1984? I don't know why it rings a bell. Anyway, working backwards, Paterno certainly has not been charged. That's the point. And the prosecutor said the other day that she had no reason to accuse him of perjury, whereas two other colleagues that to whom this was bucked up were being charged with perjury. And obviously last night the Board of Trustees had a lot to dislike about the president and about Paterno, so they're all gone. But I do think that Paterno had a more of a responsibility, and we understand that as more things come out of it. The New York Times has some reporting today on this young assistant coach, Mike McQuarrie, who saw something in a shower that probably, you know, great big kid who played college football, probably should have gone in there and broken it up. You know, a man assaulting a child in a shower, didn't do it, went the next day, as I believe, to Paterno, who then said, "We'll go to." I mean,
who then sort of kicked it upstairs.
All of this is monstrous, mm-hmm. And hour by hour, we have realized as the details come out, as they do in journalism. Sometimes it takes a while for the weight of it and the details. But no, Paterno has not been charged with anything. But did he make grievous errors in not going to police or going public or going something or firing the guy that day for unspecified reasons? No, he acted like a frightened bureaucrat. And more important, he acted like somebody who was afraid for his own image, for his own future, the way things were going. He didn't. And this, by the way, as we talk, it holds true up to now, because you had the young scholars out there throwing cans and tipping over, you know, things last night. And the one person still in that state, the most powerful person, most prominent person in the state, who could have sent them home with a rational statement was Joe Paterno, and all he did was sign a, kind of say, well, I'm not the coach anymore, you know, everybody go home, chill. But he wasn't addressing the fact that this is a terrible thing. Don't make it worse by acting out. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, they acted out. Is it because they want their, you know, they want their coach, they don't want the outsiders to tell them what to do? I mean, you know, what's their mentality? I thought college students were supposed to be iconoclasts and be better than the boosters and the people around, but these kids sound like followers rather than leaders.
Now, of course, as we mentioned, no charges filed against Paterno, but assistant coach Jerry Sandusky, a key part of the football program, arrested last Saturday. Prosecutors allege he was a serial pedophile charged with abusing 8 boys over 15 years and that the university was unable or at least unwilling to stop him. Let me introduce David Williams. He's vice chancellor for university affairs and athletics at Vanderbilt University and a member of the NCAA General Counsel Advisory Board. And David Williams, thanks for taking time out of a busy day to join us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Hello, Anthony. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thank you. Give me your reaction to this very troubling story out of Penn State.
Well, I think you used the right word, very, very troubling. You know, it's one of the things that trying to read through it, I actually had to put it down 3 or 4 times because the facts just overwhelm you. I mean, they overwhelm you as it relates to the abuse. You feel nothing but empathy and sympathy for the young victims. But at the same time, you get some disgust over what was not done. And you know, you got two aspects to me. You got someone who did something bad, and then you have some people who, in my mind, could have corrected this and maybe stopped it, who did not do what they should have done. So you have discuss for what was done, and like I said, discuss for what was not done.
Yeah, now, David Williams, you heard George Vesey talking about this idea of king football and the sort of culture of insularity that it breeds on college campuses. Do you agree with that? And if so, what needs to change? And clearly we're talking about change that is required, not just at Penn State, but elsewhere as well.
Well, I think there is. I mean, I think it's not only, you know, in our society, not only football, but certainly athletics, college athletics and professional athletics. And football on the many college campuses does have a sort of culture where if you're working in underneath it, or maybe in some cases on top of it, if it reports to you, it is basically hard. Coaches, college football coaches become kings almost, and we're seeing that with Coach Paterno. I can remember my days at Ohio State with Coach Hayes. You do see that. I was just watching an episode on about Alabama and Auburn and Bear Bryant and Shoke Jordan. These guys were, you know, a guy went and poisoned some trees in Auburn because someone put a Cam Newton jersey on a statue of Bear Bryant. I mean, Bear Bryant's been dead for years, and it's still that sort of, this is the Bears territory.
Sure.
So, yeah, that is a problem. What can be done is you have to sort of send a signal from the top, first off, that we're not going to have that. I mean, how do you basically honor a great coach but at the same time protect the university, if you like, from bad behavior by a great coach? And so that has to come from the top. And, you know, while I think Coach Paterno was a great coach and did a lot of good things, and I know the president of Penn State, and I think he's a honorable person, I think what you did see last night was, whether one agrees with it or not, the board basically taking some leadership position and say, well, somebody is in charge around here, and we're not going to have that. We have to have more of that. The other thing is, I think you have to provide a way where people can speak up without the chilling effect and the fear. And so in this assistant coach or graduate...
Yeah, now, David Williams, let me just stop you there, because this seems to be a key point in what is alleged to have happened. You're saying that people need to feel that they could speak up. So in other words, this coaching assistant who apparently saw something in the shower between the Coach Sandusky and a young boy should have just spoken up at that point. And you're saying there's an atmosphere, there's a culture that does not encourage that.
Yes, because here's a young man who's worried about his future. And I mean, and sometimes we have to put those things aside, but sometimes we have to recognize that people will make decisions realizing, man, you know, if I speak up, I'm never going to coach in here. And so I think that's where you have to have some way where people can register these complaints anonymously. And so here we have a number of phone lines where you can call in and it's recorded what comes in, and then there's a group that has to look into it. And so, and I don't know if Penn State had that, but there should be that mechanism where he could have gone somewhere and called this in to the proper people. Now, of course,
although I guess I'm having a hard time, even accepting the idea that you would need. I mean, I understand and I appreciate the idea of a tip line, but I mean, the fact that someone might not break up, you know, an apparent act of sodomy against a young child sort of blows my mind.
But we have to come to a point of realizing we all have to live with integrity, and we have moral obligations.
Yeah.
And so I do agree with you that you have to be, and that's my point about things that were not done.
Yeah.
You have to say, that's wrong, and I have to do all that I can do to basically stop it, report it, those sort of things. So I agree with you, but failing that, because I'm fearful, we need to have that other fallback. Well, I just don't know if I can do that one, but at least I can call this hotline. So I think you want to have both of them.
Understand.
And I tell people, we want to trust everybody. We want to believe everybody has integrity, but we know that's not true.
Right. David Williams, stand by. We're talking to David Williams. He's Vice Chancellor for University Affairs and Athletics at Vanderbilt University. Also with us, George Vesey of the New York Times. We've got a lot of callers who want to get in on this conversation about what's going on at Penn State. Let's go to David, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, David.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, my question, first I want to say I applaud the board of directors. You know, I think they did exactly what they needed to do. You know, my father was a dean of an Ivy League institution of academics, and I know from talking to him the battles that he went through with obviously nothing like this, but just the issues of athleticism in academics. I guess my other question is, you know, I have to disagree with the gentleman from Vanderbilt about the culpability, like you were saying, of this young assistant who saw this. His obligation was to go directly to the police. I just cannot imagine. And I guess my question is I know that the press, because it's a more newsworthy story, is focusing on Paterno and the president and the football, but this isn't a football story. This is really a story about a guy who walked into the shower, saw a man raping a child, and did nothing about it, basically. And that, to me, is absolutely appalling, and that, to me, is the real story here in the society that we live in, that tries to make excuses for these people who see these things happen and do nothing. And if it's a failure of character that he didn't do it, or if it's a fear of the culture, that's the issue there that needs to be addressed, and that's what I find most appalling.
Well, David, we thank you for the call, and we appreciate the passion and the way you articulated this, and I agree with you. I think that is the issue that's now on the table. But let's take that up in a minute. I want to get one more call in here before the break. Mark is calling from Philadelphia. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Anthony. I would like to take the defense of Mr. Paterno. I would strongly encourage anybody, including your guests, to read the grand jury presentment that was actually written and not what the media is saying about the presentment, because we're getting a lot of facts mixed up here.
All right. Do you want to just say one more thing quickly about that? I mean, what is being missed here when it comes to Coach Paterno?
Well, for first, Paterno was not, the testimony does not say that the Paterno knew of the specific act. Sandusky was not his employee at the time. He was there as an emeritus. So everybody's getting the facts mixed up.
All right, Mark. Well, let me take that up. George Vessier, I know you've been following this carefully. Respond to Mark's point there. Are we jumping to an unfair conclusion here? But I don't think anyone is saying that Paterno is guilty of something. We're talking about, not guilty of a crime. We're talking about him having had an opportunity to do more, and he did not.
Well, I think that's why the prosecuting attorney said that she was not, at that time, finding him guilty of perjury or anything, that that he was not being charged for that reason. That there is some question as to what he was told, although, as I read in the paper today, and we have reporters there, it seems that he was told more specifically, even at that, if a young coach comes in the next day and says this happened, what should Paterno have done? I'm judging him, if you want to use those words, probably stronger than I did the other day, because we keep learning things, which is what happens in journalism as it's done, and because I think he now think he should have done more from what he was told. As far as when it was, we're talking about 2002, I believe. He was not. The guy had been let go or had retired a few years earlier. He still had the keys to the place and was still a familiar figure in that place. He could bring boys in there and nobody would think anything of it, at least up till that point.
David Williams, let me bring you back into this conversation. Are there other Penn states out there that we need to be worried about or think about taking actions to prevent this kind of thing?
Well, I certainly hope there are not any out there, but certainly, you know, these are sort of, they're hard to be, but they are teaching moments. And, you know, I think everybody should go back to their campuses and other workplaces and basically make sure that they have the proper structure and are sending the proper message and freeing people that when they do see things like this or hear things like this, that they take it to the measure to make sure that it doesn't happen again and the people who are involved in it are dealt with. And so, you know, I mean, we already have scheduled, you know, a day for our folks in athletics, if nothing else, to actually go through this situation and make sure, you know, that we send the message, you see something that's wrong, you make sure it's dealt with, and if you bring it to me and you find out that I'm not taking it forward, you have not only the right, but the duty, the obligation to take it further.
David Williams, thanks so much for joining us today. That's David Williams, Vice Chancellor for University Affairs and Athletics at Vanderbilt University. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the sex abuse scandal that sacked Penn State football and stunned the nation. And we're here today with George Vessey, sports columnist for The New York Times. And George, I want you to listen to something with me. Yesterday on CBS, The Early Show, former Miami Dolphins wide receiver and former Penn State football player O.J. McDuffie said that he was appalled over this scandal and how Coach Paterno handled it. Let's listen.
I'd rather we have NCAA violations, rules violations, tattoos, you know, hanging out with a booster than something like this. This is absolutely appalling what's happened at our university.
So, George Vesey, when you talk about King football, you say it plays a role in academic scandals, recruiting scandals, the growing shadow of concussion scandals, and now this scandal at Penn State. So obviously, we're talking about a culture here that goes well beyond Penn State, right?
Oh, of course. I would say that find me a top 20 or 25 school, and you'll find people who are getting students into school one way or the other who know about jobs. I mean, they can't afford anymore to be giving, you know, $10 to a kid for lunch, but there are other things that get done, and the system is set up to get around NCAA rules, which may all be ridiculous. The point is you're trying to put on a big-time sports program on a college campus. It may be unrealistic. This is an abuse way beyond anything. This is on a human level, having nothing to do with rules and so on. It's human behavior, and nobody's coming off good on this.
Well, I want to bring in another voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Fredericksburg, Virginia, Kenneth Lanning. He's a former FBI special agent and now a private consultant, and he's been investigating child sex abuse and victimization for over 30 years. He's a founding member of the board of directors of the American Professional Society on the Abuse of Children and sits on the advisory board of the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers. And Kenneth Lanning, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yes. Hi, Anthony. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. Very quickly, what's your reaction? What do we need to learn from this terrible story at Penn State?
Well, my reaction is that I'm not an expert on big-time college football, and I think all the things that have been discussed so far may be all valid points. Bring to this is my knowledge that what appears to have happened in this case is not unique to any institute of higher learning. This is something that I've seen repeatedly with institutions that are involved in what's referred to as youth-serving organizations. These are organizations that, as part of their work, involve doing something for children and having employees or volunteers work with children. And so whether you're talking about the Catholic Church, a school district, some youth organization, camp counselors, I've seen this same dynamic repeatedly. And a lot of what they're describing here is not unique to big-time college football. This reluctance to get involved, not knowing who to report to, and all those kinds of things, these cover-up damage control, are things that happen all the time in other youth-serving organizations.
So what needs to change?
What needs to change, I believe, is the first thing that has to happen is people have to increase their knowledge about this kind of sexual victimization of children. There's an overemphasis on stranger danger and that kind of victimization, which is certainly a terrible thing, but there's a lot of focus on that. There's a certain amount of focus on intrafamilial abuse. What's lost here and what so many people in this country don't understand, this involves what I refer to, for want of a better term, the nice guy molester, the pillar of the community, this guy who's doing youth work, who essentially interacts with kids by grooming and seducing them, befriending them, grooming and seducing their parents, gaining their trust and cooperation, and then victimizing them. And what happens is when people see that, they don't understand why these victims haven't come forward to complain. They don't understand how somebody who seems nice and they shook their hand and had them over for dinner, how somebody like that could be doing this. And then there also is this problem that I think is linked, but it's not unique to college football, this aura of wanting to damage control, recognizing the embarrassment that this is going to cause for your institution, and believing that the best way to deal with this is to sweep it under the carpet and kind of slide it out the door so the institution isn't damaged.
Kenneth Lanning, you put a lot on the table, a lot for us to think about and talk about, and we've got a bunch of callers lined up, so stick around if you would and help us sort through them. Let's go to Michelle, who's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Michelle.
Oh, hey, Anthony. I feel like he just made all the points I wanted to make.
Well, which one in particular? What stood out for you there?
The obsession with stranger danger. The obsession with the belief that we can protect kids from identifiable bad people who we as adults can spot and figure out. And it has grown to the point where it is a complete obsession. I do public speaking on sexual assault and abuse of children, and I will tell you that audiences simply do not want to hear stories about people like Sandusky and others. Their minds are so disturbed by the reality of child sexual abuse, the reality, not the picture that's put in the press. And it really troubles me that we're 45 minutes into this conversation, and we are now hearing from Ken Lanning. And that's not a slam on Point. It's just that notice how quickly the media attention has gone to Paterno and Penn State and the athletic department.
Well, Michelle, it's true about with respect. That's sort of where the story started. But I'm really glad that we're talking about these points now. And let me sort of throw your idea back to Ken Lanning. And Kenneth, there's Carol talking about this idea. And this is something that struck me when I was coming into. I'm sorry, Michelle. This is something that struck me as I was coming into work today, that when it comes to child sex abuse, whether it's the church, whether it's Penn State, even within families, and I'm familiar with some families where this has occurred, the initial response is always like, it can't be. It couldn't have happened. And yet we know that it does happen again and again and again. Why this reluctance to sort of accept it and face it and respond to it?
Well, in my opinion, this is a whole of extremely difficult area to deal with. As a matter of fact, I believe one of your earlier speakers happily mentioned that when he started to read about this, he had to put down the paper three or four times before he can continue on. So for most people that prefer not to deal with this, it's a very unpleasant topic. But if we are going to deal with it, we seem to prefer those cases where there's a clear-cut differentiation between good and evil. So a horrible, evil sexual predator grabbed some innocent child in the front yard and dragged her away. That's a terrible thing, but everything is clear-cut. We have identifiable bad people. What is really scary is to believe that someone who looks like everybody else acts like somebody else. As a matter of fact, for many of these individuals, their only distinguishing characteristic or behavior, really, is that they treat children better than most other people treat children. And that's a scary concept that people don't want to have to deal with, that there's no easy way to recognize these individuals. And many institutions, as I said, are afraid of embarrassment and what's going to happen to them and the consequences for them. And so for a variety of reasons, they don't do the kind of research they need to do to learn about the nature of this problem and then develop programs to address it. Now, the only thing I would say, I'm not trying to defend Penn State, but Penn State is clearly, obviously, not a classic youth-serving organization. But once they allowed this man to bring children onto their campus, they became a youth-serving organization. And at that point, they should have recognized their responsibilities and their liabilities to put in place programs to deal with this. So that when this is reported, and my understanding of this is there's reports that surface in 1994, 1998, 2002, there's a series. We can blame that guy who looked at in the locker room, and I don't know exactly what he saw, but whatever he saw. But there's other instances where there's suspicions here. And what did these organizations do about it? How did they address it? What response did they make so that they can end this a lot sooner and not allow it to go on?
Let's take another call. Carol is calling from Boston. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Anthony. I wanted to underscore what the young man from North Carolina said about the duty of the guy who saw this to report it to the police, because unless it gets reported to the police by, in this case, a witness, it then becomes the child's voice against the perpetrator's voice. And often the perpetrator's voice is a lot more powerful. Certainly in this case, a guy who was in a position of authority. And so then what has to happen is that the child's voice gets shored up by, you know, the first person he or she told, and it's a much longer process. But if the witness had reported this to the police, well, first of all, subsequent victims might not have been victimized. And also, as I said, it becomes much more powerful. The child is always in a less powerful position. So I strongly agree with the person who said, guy should have gone to the police.
Should have gone rather than kicking it upstairs or handing it over to his coach and hoping that the institution deal with it. Yeah, go ahead, Kenneth Lanning.
what I was going to say here is that obviously this the individual who witnessed something could have directly called the police. But if he just went to his superiors, and I can't say with certainty exactly what he saw, but when he went to his superiors, certainly his superiors should have then called the police. Someone should have called the police.
I just want to be really clear about this, because we actually know what he is alleged to have seen, and it's shocking. He is alleged to have seen Jerry Sandusky having anal intercourse with a 10-year-old. I mean, it's just really important to put,
In a perfect world, there would be a written record that he filed at the time he saw it. This was in 2002. There should be a written record of exactly what he reported, exactly what he said he saw. I'm not going to get into that. But the point of it is whether he or somebody he reported to, someone should have called the police. The other important thing to understand about these cases is with this kind of offender, it is not a he said, she said situation. It is they said, he said. Always multiple victims in this case, and the case like this does not have to rest on any one victim's statement. And I agree with the previous caller who talked how the victims of this can be attacked and their credibility questioned. But when you then have 3, 5, 10, 20, 30 victims coming forward, that problem is then taken care of that way, because this type of offender, not all offenders, but this type of offender, almost, if it is true, almost always has multiple victims.
Let's get a couple more calls into the program. John is calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Hi, John.
Hi, Anthony. It seems to me that there's a fundamental unfairness in the coverage here with respect to Paterno. Nothing I would say would excuse Paterno, but the reason I think the coverage is unfair is that in the situation, you had a chain of people who were aware of certain information, and each of them had a responsibility to call the police. The first person had a high level of responsibility because they had the most information, and the last person had a very high level of responsibility because they are in charge. Paterno is in the middle. Nothing excuses his lack of calling, but all of the headlines, open up Google News and see 4,000 headlines. Each headline starts with Joe Paterno.
So you think he's being unfairly singled out in this sort of chain of failures, I guess, is the idea. Well, let me put that idea to George Vesey, because our time is running low, John, and I'm really grateful that you put this question on the table. George, what do you say to John's point?
You know, I started off by thinking that about 72 hours ago, but the more that we learn, the more I think that he was in the middle of it. He certainly had more. I mean, this is a man that I know to be, and I've known him for a long time, I know to be or to have been an intelligent, active person who was aware of the world around him. At some point, he stopped being that, certainly in this case. I do, because I think I know him a bit, I do hold him responsible for not having done enough with what he was told. From what I read, from what I hear in the papers today, that he actually was told some pretty specific stuff. I've seen both sides of it. Either way you look at it, I don't think he did enough, given what I walk through the park in my neighborhood and parents' heads turn. They're worried about some, guy with long hair and a headset on walking through the park. Why is this going on? I live around the corner. So people are certainly aware of it. If Paterno did not have the normal concerns about reporting something or making sure that it was reported, and if the boss doesn't do something about it, if it gets kicked up to Spagna, well, this is why Spagna was fired last night. Paterno was not being charged with anything. At least he's getting off legally free.
Well, John, thanks so much for the call. Let's take another call. John is calling from Watertown, New York. Hi, John.
Hi, Anthony. Three things. First of all, I agree. I'm a former athletic director, college athletic director, and the trustees have more facts than the rest of us, and they have to answer to what is the academic mission of the institution. So, number one, I think they did the right thing. Two things that puzzle me in this, and the first thing is that I think Coach Paterno, who's, his record stands as it is, I think his judgment got clouded by the fact that this man was his friend. And I think that's what happens in these kinds of situations.
Friend and longtime assistant coach that had a big role in the football program at Penn State.
Yeah, and maybe if it was anybody else, he would have handled it differently. But I think that clouds it.
Well, John, let me pick up that point because our time, we're just about out of time, but I'd like to get both George Vesey and Kenneth Lanning to sort of give a final thought here. George Vesey, I mean, you made a point this week that so many of these coaches and members of the football program, and for that matter, administrators at Penn State have been there such a long time that it creates kind of almost a stasis, and that contributes to this sort of paralysis to do the right thing.
Well, everybody knew each other. There was no fresh breath of air there, and they were so locked into the product. The product was the next game and winning it and getting to a bowl game. They all believed in the same thing. Ultimately, they believed in winning a national championship more than they believed in thinking like normal citizens. It's a grotesque tragedy that you've got people running a university who care more about winning 12 or 13 football games a year than they do about being as normal as people in my neighborhood who might keep an eye out on cars cruising the neighborhood.
Yeah. Kenneth Lanning, we literally have 5 seconds left. I want to give you a chance to sort of have the last word here, thought.
What I would say is I agree with that last caller about the closeness, but that happens all the time in these cases. That's why the institution has to have a mechanism in place where they minimize that idea that decisions are going to be made based on friendships and that personal knowledge. Somebody has to be looking at it objectively. That certainly is also one advantage of calling the police quickly, because that's what they also can do.
Well, lots
good
of lessons.
Good to have an expert on.
Let's hope that some of these lessons get absorbed. Kenneth Lanning is a former FBI special agent and sits on the advisory board of the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers. Kenneth Lanning, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And George Vesey, sports columnist for the New York Times. George, great having you on our show. We're very grateful.
Hey, my pleasure. Always nice to be on your show.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.